Good afternoon, everyone. The committee will come to order, and we will move the minutes. Representative Falk, would you like to make that motion, please?
Move the minutes? Oh, absolutely.
The minutes are moved.
Aye.
Everybody in favor, aye. And
aye.
All right. Good start.
There being one in favor and none against.
And none against. Okay, today we have House File 1682, Representative Atkins before us. And Representative Atkins, are you moving this then to Ways and Means? Is that our business here this afternoon? Okay.
Yeah, I would move House File 1682 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And then there is an author's amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, I did that. The oath, is it the A130365? Is that the amendment that we're referring to?
That is, that's the author's amendment. And I, Madam Chair, I just want to move that at this point. I don't know that we want to even act on it yet, what I've indicated, but that's what we're going to be working off of. That's the delete all amendment. My plan, and I've shared it with Representative Hoppe as well as other members that are interested, is to do a walkthrough of the bill today, and we may as well do a walkthrough of the delete all since that actually has numbers in it, and then we'll take up the delete all for a vote and amendments to the delete all tomorrow during Wednesday's session, if that's all right with you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely, I agree. And then to the amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's one slight oral amendment to the amendment on the A130365 is on line 1.1. It'll be Atkins moves to amend House File number 1682. And I'd incorporate that into my motion, Madam Chair, which we'll actually act upon then tomorrow. But that's the only change to the delete all. And then with that, Madam Chair, if it's all right, I'll just do a walkthrough of what's in the bill, and then we've got folks here from the various departments and agencies in the event that members have any questions.
Very good. Go ahead.
All right. And as members know, we've had about a month ago, we had the various agencies and departments come and kind of do a walkthrough of what they do and what their budgets are. I've got them present to answer questions, and we'll call upon them when we get to an opportunity for members to ask questions about the bill. The one 30,000-foot comment that I would make is a number of these budgets, it's nice that the Speaker was kind enough to for the first time, make this a Finance Committee, because the Commerce Department budget, for example, we have the most hands-on experience with the Commerce Department, and it makes sense to have that budget, as well as charitable gaming and the PUC, Explore Minnesota, and the Lottery and Racing Commission come through here as well, because we have the closest interaction with those. What's going to happen, though, is that we've got our own omnibus bill that will then be pieced out to the other omnibus bills in which it would best fit, assuming that it passes this committee, and in whatever shape it comes out with amendments that may go on tomorrow. But one thing to note is that most of these don't have a huge amount of general fund impact. That doesn't make them any less important to scrutinize. But many of these costs are pass-throughs. There's fees that are charged, and then they're spent on things that serve the particular industry that paid the fee. With that, a couple things I'll call your attention to as we walk through in Article 1, I'll give you a quick sense of what the changes are, and then we'll walk through the bill itself. In each of the departments, Department of Commerce, Public Utilities Commission, Gambling Control, and the Racing Commission, as well as Explore Minnesota, there is a 1% base adjustment. We've gone roughly a decade without increasing salaries and benefits for our employees, and this is an opportunity to do that. In the unclaimed property portion of the bill, this would be, and I believe it's Section 3 of the bill. You may have heard some concern over time about, and there was an article written about whether the online sharing with members of the public about unclaimed property does enough to let people know about it. And you may remember when I looked at people with little gray hair in the room, when there used to be, you'd open up the Pioneer Press or the Star Tribune, and there'd be a whole page that was put out by the Department of Commerce about people who had unclaimed property at the department. We're going to try that a little bit again. There's $25,000 in the bill for some print ads. And then at the end of running the print ads versus the online, hopefully the department will be able to kind of report back to us on which one is and how effective each of those modes are. I'm going to actually call upon Representative Johnson. There's a piece for the Broadband Development Office. In the governor's recommendations, there was $250,000 in year one, as well as $250,000 in year two for the Broadband Development Office. It was one of the Broadband Task Force's recommendations that they felt quite strongly about, the governor felt quite strongly about, and Representative Chairman Johnson felt quite strongly about as well. And what I'd ask, if he would be kind enough, there's the piece that's spending-wise, which is an additional $250,000 a year, but there's also some policy elements to it. And if it's all right with you, Madam Chair, I'd ask Chairman Johnson to kind of walk us through the need for the Broadband Development Office and some of the policy components of the bill.
Very good. And Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Chair Atkins' issues that he raised regarding the Broadband Development Office. I would say a couple of things regarding the additional funding. The duties spelled out in 1255 are quite significant, and I think in order to more fully implement them, this funding will go a long way towards doing that. So the money will help clearly provide the kind of services for broadband deployment throughout the state that we really need to do in order to meet the goals of access and speed. Section C. Right. The other thing I would note is that there's other aspects to the broadband task force that could be more fully implemented, such as they had several recommendations involved, including scholarships for students meeting poverty guidelines, increasing money for public libraries and schools for internet access. Those are all important components that I think could more be fully vetted with the kind of funding that's recommended. Regarding the language in the bill, we talked about that in Bill 1255, the collaborative database, working with the Department of Transportation to establish a website where folks could see what's going on with respect to construction and make plans for a right-of-way implementation of the wiring of broadband. The annual reports required by the broadband office and all the duties that are laid out. Again, this is pretty much what's specified in 1255, which we passed a week ago or so. And with that, I'll end my comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson. And by the way, and again, members, we're just trying to give the overview at this point. I appreciate or welcome the opportunity to spend most of the time on members' questions or on testimony. So my comments are only a few more minutes long, and then we'll open it up for questions, and we've got people here from the various departments to testify. The next thing I'd like to call your attention to is there's for the deaf, blind, and hard of hearing in the TAM account, there's $300,000 in each of the each year one and year two. That is their current allotment. They are seeking a little bit more money that's not currently reflected in this omnibus finance bill. They're seeking $200,000 more in year one. They're seeking $500,000 more in year two. I think they've got a credible basis for making an argument for those folks. The unusual thing about the deaf, blind, and hard of hearing account is that it's actually shared by several different pieces of the several different committee jurisdictions. And so what I told Ms. Hartnett is the best place to probably address that. We're the funding piece, and where those expenditures occur is in other committees' jurisdictions, is that we deal with that issue when we get together at Ways and Means. so that we can have a thoughtful discussion among the various committee chairs and members of those committees that are on those individual committees, rather than just increase the amount here but not necessarily have jurisdiction with respect to how the money is spent. So please don't take that as any kind of slam on her request or rejection of her request, but rather just a logistical issue about the fact that we don't have their expenditure piece within this committee's jurisdiction. I talked about the PUC, the Gambling Control Board, the Racing Commission. The State Lottery is essentially a standalone that operates its own budget. The most significant change would be to Explore Minnesota. The tourism budget has been, we had, as a result of the revenues that are coming in other, particularly the Commerce Department, there was about little over $5 million left at the bottom line. And at least within the jurisdiction of this committee, we could have left that for the general fund for other folks to decide how to spend. Or as I opted to do and would welcome input from members of the committee, we placed that with Explore Minnesota. The reason that's been placed with Explore Minnesota and solely for marketing is because you'll recall when they came and joined us about a month ago, they talked about, and they've actually got they can demonstrate it with data, is they have about an 8-to-1 return on investment. And that's literally 8-to-1 in terms of state and local taxes generated. For every dollar that we invest, there's $8 that comes in state and local taxes. There's $22 that comes in income, and there's over $80 that comes in as a result of tourist spending here in Minnesota. The challenge that they have is that unlike states like Michigan and South Dakota and Illinois, which have considerably greater budgets and can advertise here in Minnesota, their footprint in terms of where they're actually able to advertise only goes about a couple hundred miles away. With this, we're hoping that their reach will be able to go farther and wider, and that they will continue to generate that 8-to-1 return on investment. Those are the significant changes finance-wise. As far as policy, Representative Johnson, Chairman Johnson talked about the broadband policy. There is an increase in the petroleum inspection fee from 81 to 89 cents that hasn't been updated in a long time. There's a change in the insurance agent fee from $10 to $30, which again hasn't been changed in a long time. And finally, there's Representative Dabney's contract for deed bill, which my understanding is that there are several members of this committee are co-authors on that bill. It's my understanding it has not proven to be a controversial bill, but that it did get kind of lost on the wayside coming out of housing and trying to move through the process. So we have included it here in spite of my effort to try to keep this to be a relatively non-controversial bill. And if there's a great deal of controversy about that, then I would expect that we will again leave it by the wayside. But as long as there's comfort with respect to that piece, and we have Mr. Elwood here to talk about it if members have questions. But my understanding is that it's moved smoothly through the committee and just got lost as we were going through the deadline process. So that is also in the bill. With that, Madam Chair, I tried to do the walkthrough in about 20 minutes. We've got, again, members here from all of the various affected departments and agencies, and we would welcome either testimony from members of the public or questions or concerns from members of the committee.
Thank you for the walkthrough, Representative Atkins. We do have a couple of representatives down for questions. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got several questions as we go through the bill, but I'll just start with the first ones that I have. And this is probably more for Representative Johnson on the Office of Broadband that you're establishing here. Can you first tell me this? How many FTEs are we creating by the creation of this Office of Broadband? Can you tell me that?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, there was a fiscal note done back when the expenditure was $250,000 per year, and at that time, two FTEs were set forth, one director and one staff. With the increase to $500,000, I would anticipate either one more staff or looking at the other task force recommendations and seeing if it made more sense to implement some of those instead.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're looking at three FTEs because you went from an original bill that was at $50,000, and now we're talking about spending $500,000 for the creation of this office. Did I hear you correctly? I wasn't sure.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, from $250,000 per year to to $500,000 per year.
Okay. And then,
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, so do you know how much of the $500,000 will be consumed by salaries and benefits and all of that good stuff?
Representative
Johnson. Kind of the overhead costs?
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, there is an estimate done, and a fiscal note is forthcoming. It'll be due April 5th. Looking at two FTEs, for example, the fiscal analyst recommended or set forth $185,000 for fiscal year 14.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. I'm going to pause on that a little bit, and then I had a question on the petroleum fee for Representative Atkins, and it's going from 81 cents to 89 cents. Can you tell me a little bit about who would be paying? Is this home heating fuel? Who pays for this?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair, rather than do the Atkins version, I do have a member here from the Department of Commerce who can provide some detailed answers with respect to Section 6.
All right.
And for members, this is Section 6. It's on page 11 of your bill. If you're trying to follow, and it's on line 11.21.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Oh, Madam Chair, Tim Janke, CFO for the Department of Commerce. Madam Chair, Representative, the fee that's set forth and that will be changed from 81 to 89 cents is. There's a couple of components to it that I'll try to explain first. And so the 81 cents is the increase in the amount that the department will be retaining out of $1 per 1,000 gallons existing. And then, so that will be the general fund will be reduced by that amount because the department will be retaining that. And then as well, there's fee increases for the weights and measures division that will offset that and basically leave the general fund at a net neutral.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I'm reading through the language here quickly, it shows that, you know, that money also goes towards weatherization assistance. And you're saying the fees that will be charged for the weights and measures will fill in that gap. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Janke.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
And Madam Chair, who pays then for the division of weights and measures? Who's paying those increases in fees? And where is, I didn't see that in this part of the bill. Can you tell me where that is?
Mr. Janke.
Madam Chair, Representative, the increase, I'm just quickly looking through the language here to find that section. It's actually in the, it is on line 2.33. The fees for the weights and measures unit are increased by 30% during fiscal year 14, and that those dollars are deposited in the general fund. Those are a wide variety of entities that would be paying that. It could be grocery stores for scales that they would be going out to test those up to freight rail cars, to metrology services, to a number of different items within the weights and measures division.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And can you tell me when we're looking on page 3, then it's talking about how much money is going to be generated from that. Is that more, the same, or less than what is the 8 cents difference that you have on the petroleum fee increase?
Mr. Janke.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe I'm remember it's about a $54,000 net generation to the general fund, so it was our best effort to offset those to have a net impact of zero, but there's a little bit extra that will go to the general fund.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a question for Chair Atkins. On page 4, line 4.19, Explore Minnesota Tourism, $14,059,000. If your bill that was heard in taxes today would become law, would that offset this number, or just what would the mechanics be?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair, Representative Davids, thank you for assuming that my bill in taxes has some life to it.
Well, Madam Chair and Chair Atkins, David. I thought you did a brilliant job presenting it, and it was very compelling.
Well, thank you. I did too. unfortunately, I'm not so sure that the Chair thought it was quite as compelling as you and I may have. This is a fairly common thing to have happen, as Representative Davids knows. We've got two independent items that may have an impact on the Explore Minnesota tourism budget. Frankly, I would hope that both would happen, but my sense is that we'd be lucky if we get this one. If, in fact, that were to occur, then that's a good question. The two would, I think, in ways and means, we would have to put the two together and figure out if it's if they need to be added or if they are, whether they're additive or whether or not one is just in place of the other.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for the question, by the way. That's a good point.
Yeah. Any other questions from members? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along the lines that Representative Anderson was talking about, on 6.33, where we're talking about the increase for the appointment of an agent filed with the commissioner from $10 to $30, that additional $20, where is that going? Is that for operations of being able to deal with the paperwork of filing with the commissioner, or is that going to a different fund?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Woodard. It goes to the Commerce Committee, House Commerce Committee operating budget. if only. No, it's designed to fund the department, the Commerce Department. And it's been, if we had Mr. Jenke back, it's been literally years and years, maybe a decade or more, since we've had any increase in that fee. And I, at least for one, have not heard from any agent in terms of a concern about it. It's not meaning that there isn't, but I just don't think that there's a huge amount. Maybe Representative Davids will share with us his concern.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I was going to kind of lay low on that one because I don't see any continuing education additional requirements here, so I was going to be a little bit light, but
we can put that in if you'd like.
that fee is a not really problematic in my mind as far as if you're a State Farm agent, American Family, Farm Bureau, or you're captive. That does cost me quite a bit more because I might contract with up to how many companies, so it's each appointment. So if I contract with 40 companies during the year, that'd be $1,200 on that. But so you I don't know if anybody's really aware of that, but that's the one where you file, like I have some great new product with Company X, and so I go file with Company X. I pay that $10, or the company pays, depends on how it's worked. That could be somewhat problematic to an independent agent that contracts with 30, 40 companies in a year, if I'm reading that right.
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, if I might ask you a question. Do you know how many of them, I've heard that that's kind of the scenario. Sometimes it's the company that pays, sometimes it's the individual agent that pays. Do you have is it about half the time that the company pays? Is it two-thirds the time?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've seen it probably maybe a third the agent pays, maybe two-thirds the companies do. A lot of times companies will pick it up. A lot of times if you're a captive company like a State Farm, they pick it up, I think, or they used to. But some of us independent guys, we end up paying some of that. And it depends on the state, too. But a lot of times I think the company is going to pick that up.
Okay. Well, I would assume with an agent like you, Representative Davids, they'd want to pick that up.
So Davids.
That's a good point.
You know, I'm just saying.
I had a very good month yesterday.
Representative Woodard, follow up? Or? Yeah. Okay. Representative Atkins, to you. I'm sorry. Do we have another question? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I'm kind of lurking over here. Can I ask Representative Johnson a couple more questions about the broadband?
Representative Johnson.
And Representative Johnson, if you covered it in earlier remarks, I missed it, so I apologize if you did. But why the change from 250 to 500?
Representative Johnson.
A couple things. I think the duties laid out and the job responsibilities of the Broadband Task Force are such that easily more work could be done to fully implement the task force recommendations. So that'd be one reason. The second would be there's certain recommendations in the task force report from Margaret Keller Anderson that were not implemented and aren't part of the bill, and with additional funding, I think could go ways to help further the access and the usage of broadband in the state. So it's for those reasons.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Johnson. And Representative Johnson, or Chair Johnson, I guess, if you could also just educate the committee. Some of the members haven't been on the committee as long and probably aren't familiar with where the money's coming from, and will that have any impact on what that money would have been used for?
Representative Johnson.
Well, it's coming from the Department of Commerce budget, and maybe...
Representative Hoppe.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Johnson.
You're welcome.
And Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to move on to the auto theft prevention account on here. On this, Representative Atkins, it looks like what you're doing is, are you completely dedicating it just to all auto theft prevention? Or I know that we heard legislation earlier that was different from that, and you've got $1.3 million that transferred to the general fund. What is that going to be used for then?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, my understanding is that this was, and let's take a step back from your question, I believe that this section of the bill is actually coming out. The reason it was in, and it's evidently an iteration of existing law, was to place it in a different section so that the Department of Revenue folks would audit it, or some, it had an explanation along those lines. But unless, and I'm looking to my able-bodied, much smarter staff than me, is that that was the only reason that this section was even included. We're not proposing any change along the, and you referenced a bill that does make a significant change. Mm-hmm. We're not proposing to do that in this bill. And in fact, tomorrow, as an amendment to the delete all, we will take out Section 7 of the bill altogether.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Atkins. Okay, that's good, helpful to know. I just am concerned about if we do have a surplus, if there's been any thought to providing that as a rebate back to those people that pay auto insurance, since it's generating more revenue than what's currently been used.
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for that question. My sense is that as a result of that bill that's traveling independently that we heard in here the other day, I guess a couple weeks ago now, is that that ought to be part of the discussion. I hope it will be part of the discussion. But we don't. My goal in this bill was to try to keep most of the controversy out of this this bill, and that is an issue that frankly has a little bit of controversy to it, and that's why it's traveling independently of this bill. So I would anticipate a vibrant discussion in additional committees or on the House floor of that particular item, that an issue that you raised.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
And Madam Chair, just to kind of point out on Representative Hoppe's question, if I'm reading this correctly, Representative Johnson, it doesn't, the money for the Broadband Development Office doesn't come out of the Department of Commerce's budget. It looks like it's coming out of the Telecommunications Access Fund, which pays for the deaf and deafblind and hard of hearing resources that we provide. Is that is that correct? Am I, as I'm reading it, maybe I'm not reading it correctly. Can you tell me?
Representative Johnson.
Because as you have it on page 3 of the bill in subdivision 5, you've got $500,000 each year for the Broadband Development Office. I'm assuming that's coming out of the Telecommunications Access Fund, or is that not correct?
And maybe, Madam Chair, we might want to go to the fiscal staff with respect to specific, if that's all right, Representative Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, you're right that it comes out of the telecommunications line item that is part of the Commerce Department, and it's separate from the Telecommunications Access Minnesota Fund. It's not the same like little pot of money, and so it's just general fund money. It's additional general fund money that would be appropriated for the Broadband Development Office.
Okay. Great.
Representative Atkins.
I'm just happy to answer any additional questions that members may have, Madam Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Section 11 on contracts for deed involving residential property, I think that's the first time we've seen that in this committee. Can you tell me where that, one, came from, and two, you know, realtors and folks who are involved in this on a daily basis, are they on board with that? Or?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair and Representative Woodard, I appreciate you bringing it up. Mr. Elwood would join us, as I said at the outset, I think maybe perhaps before he was here, this is something that we picked up because apparently it had an issue coming out of one of the committees and wasn't picked up. My understanding is it's not controversial, but I would like Mr. Elwood to be able to walk you through it.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood. State your name and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, Representative Woodard. This is a bill that has been vetted and worked very closely with the Minnesota Association of Realtors and the Minnesota State Bar Association, and this is a non-controversial bill at this stage. They're all fine with it. We work very closely with them. Primarily what it does is provide a disclosure to potential buyers about some of the risks and obligations they're taking on in contracts for deed and advising them to see an attorney or the homeownership center for advice and information, get an appraisal, get an inspection, the kinds of things that you would do in any normal home buying endeavor. It also exempts any transaction in which the purchaser is represented by a licensed realtor, and it also only impacts people that are doing multiple sales, and it's defined in the statute. So it's not every single one-on-one transaction. It's people who are in the business of contracts for deed, which is a problem that's been unearthed over the last several years.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the realtors have testified and support the bill or support that piece of the bill?
Mr. Elwood.
Madam Chair and Representative Woodard, they've testified that they've worked with us and they are not in opposition to this bill.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, just one quick follow-up. So was there any conversation on why a 12-point type instead of a 13 or 14-point type, or is that something that was part of the compromise?
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, no, that was the way it came out of as introduced. Nobody really said anything about it. We tried to get it on one page.
Representative Woodard?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
What is 12-point type? And I think, Representative Swedinski, you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just kind of on that section, since we're it's kind of new to this. Have we seen any fiscal impact with this portion of the bill,
Mr. Woodard? Mr. Owen,
Madam Chair and Representative Swedinski, no. This is between two private parties and has no impact on the state budget.
Sounds good.
And any other questions from any other members on any of this? As anyone else wants to testify on this provision, please come down to the table and do so. And if not, any testifiers for or against? Representative Swedinski? No, he's done. Okay. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none.
Okay. Madam Chair, then I just invite, as members know, we don't have a 24-hour rule in this committee, and that's by design. Sometimes folks do their best work with only a couple hours left before a bill comes up for a hearing. I get that. My one request, though, is for the purposes of people who are interested in this bill, if members do have amendments, try to get them in just as soon as you can so that we can put them online and share them with people who might be interested in testifying for or against. That's all I'd ask. And with that, Madam Chair, I don't have any further comments. I'll just look forward to seeing members back again tomorrow.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll lay the bill over, and tomorrow we're adjourned. Thank you.